The following talk was given at the Insight Meditation Center in Redwood City, California. Please visit our website at audiodharma.org.
So before I offer this talk today, I think there's one announcement, maybe a couple, but and that is that we are beginning to make plans to begin a slow opening for IMC. It's possible it could be as soon as in a couple of weeks. It depends whether we can put together the protocol that we would like to have to feel safe coming here. And we'll have more kind of care given to it than we were planning to during the summer. So the next Sunday, after this 10 o'clock Dharma talk, the plan is to have a community meeting for the IMC community. And one of the things we'll do is talk about that a little bit and describe the protocol. And we'll start by opening small, probably on a Sunday, and maybe with 25 people coming and people who register ahead of time. And then we'll see how that feels and how that goes. And then maybe we'll slowly start to increase and maybe have more programs. So that's for next week, a community meeting. And the Zoom link will be up and posted in What's New some days before. And also I'll post it in the calendar for this event, for that event, in the IMC calendar. And so those are the two places you can get it. And I'll probably post it also here in the chat, so that on YouTube. So if you're on YouTube, you can just maybe just jump over. And then when we open on Sundays, we'll still do the Sunday morning on YouTube. We were doing that before the pandemic, and we'll continue after. So to do vipassana, the practice of clear seeing, is to see in a new way. And in a new way that begins opening up a whole other possibility for how we can grow and develop and unfold, our life can unfold. And it's a marvelous thing to learn a new way and then to give ourselves to that new way and let that new way really develop and grow and change us from the inside out in a useful way. And that's the Buddhist path involves. And initially, the new way of seeing is learned. Initially, it's maybe even provisionally that we hear something and then we try it out. Like, hey, we've heard that there's a new way of seeing. I kind of get a sense of it. So I'll do my best and see how it is. And then over time, maybe we'll have evidence that this is actually works really well. It's actually a very useful framework for living our lives, and so that it grows and grows. And this growing of the momentum around a new way of seeing, new way of living, is there's a lot of analogies the Buddha gives that have analogies of movement. Movement of a stream, entering a stream and being carried by the stream, or water, rainwater falling on a hillside, on the mountainside, and then the drops roll down and become bigger drops, and they flow into little creeklets, and those little creeklets flow into little pools, and the pools overflow with enough water, and they flow into little streams, and the streams keep flowing to larger ponds. When they overflow, it flows further down into, becomes rivers, and the rivers flow into bigger lakes. And when those overflow, the water just keeps getting bigger and bigger and stronger and keeps going downhill until eventually it makes its way all the way to the ocean. And so this idea of movement, that we're entering into this movement of growth and development and flow. And the rainwater analogy is fascinating because it has two different meanings. It points both to the growth, something's growing in strength and capacity, And it's also flowing down water. It's following gravity rather than resisting gravity, following gravity in a natural way all the way to the ocean where it doesn't have to flow anymore. It can come to a rest of sorts. And this new way of seeing encouraged is one way of describing it is a very simple mindfulness, just very simple, ordinary seeing things in their own, in how they are as they appear, as they exist in the moment. Without, you know, as we do mindfulness practice, without reference to the past, to the future, and without reference to, and this is what more difficult, without reference to the egoistic self, without reference to the ideas we build up around who we are and what we need and who we aren't, and the judgments we have about ourselves, the ways we undermine ourselves with negative self-talk, the way that we have delusions of grandeur about how wonderful we are, and we just allow experience to just be itself without any reference to a self, but we see it clearly. Now, this isn't necessarily how we're supposed to live our life the whole time. Past and future are valuable and enriches life as well. But in meditation, that's not what we're trying to do. Meditation is trying to really discover something very radically new and allow this stream inside of us to get bigger and flow and to be carried along by it, the Dharma stream. And so it does involve seeing in a new way. A fascinating way of presenting this is that it involves seeing our suffering in a new way. And some of you probably are tired of Buddhists always talking about suffering, suffering this, suffering that, and maybe you even kind of tune out a little bit. As soon as you hear the word suffering, it's repeated so much. What's fascinating is that the word, Pali word for suffering, dukkha, the literal meaning of it is not suffering. The literal meaning of it is pain. And we often, by application, it involves kind of psychological pain and emotional pain that we would like to call suffering. But it's useful to think of it as pain. And what happens if we see so-called suffering or the big sufferings of our life as pain rather than suffering, it begins to maybe remove a little bit the hegemony of self, the ways in which self will invest in the self. In this, we get invested in the pain. In the pain, we get interested in pain. We get infatuated with the pain, we get all these ways we get involved with the pain. But one of the ways we get involved in it is we overlay attachments and reactivity on top of whatever pain we're looking at, so that there might be emotional pain, there might be psychological pain, there might be physical pain, existential pain, all kinds of pains come along with being alive. And then we overlay our ideas on top of it. It shouldn't be there. This means that I'm living life the wrong way. I'm doing something wrong that I feel pain. I need to be the one who now gets rid of it. Who this is happening to me? I'm the victim of it all. There's a pain of loss, and then we refer that loss to all the ways in which I thought I was going to live my life and build up my wonderful life, is not possible now. It's sad, and it's, you know, that this happens, but there can be a lot of extra investment of self, what it's in for me, myself, and mine, which is separate from the pain of the loss. Now it's the pain of losing a future, which is a little different than we imagined, than just the particular loss we have. So the grief sometimes can get quite complicated, what it involves. There can be anguish over the pain because we add so much meaning to it and so much projections into the future. This is always going to be this way. It's always been this way. I'll never make it. Never figure it out. This is too much for me, and no one's caring for me. No one's taking care of me, and I feel so lonely in my dismay, in my despair. So I don't want to belittle or how difficult it is to have human suffering. It's quite challenging. But I want to try to get across the idea that there are certain layers, overlaying certain degree of extra baggage on top of it, our reactivity, our commentary. And maybe that's maybe just a veneer on top of it. And so maybe it's not very much. But for some people, it's actually not so, you know, the overlay is actually the primary quality of what makes the pain suffering. And so the suggestion is to see a new way, and maybe it's an outrageous suggestion, is that to see our suffering, whatever we have, whatever we call it, but not call it suffering, not call it grief, not call it anguish, not call it dismay or depression or anxiety and all these things that we now have gotten used to calling it. It's valuable to see it that way. I don't want to diminish the importance of seeing clearly. But when we sit to meditate, it might be a time in our life where we can let it be very simple and just see it as pain and make it that simple. And seeing it just as pain might help us to begin relaxing the mental work activity of these overlays we put on top of it, the way helps us build a story of me, myself, and mine. And we might start seeing that some of those layers lighten up. The pain is still there, but it's not as intense. It's not as debilitating. It has a whole different quality of it. So I'll give you a simple example. I don't want to belittle how difficult life is to give a simple example, but simple makes it maybe clearer. That I learned was very powerful learning for me, so that's why I like telling it. That when I first started meditating, I was practicing Zen where you weren't supposed to move during the 40 minutes of meditation. But my body had not been conditioned to sit in this posture. And so my knees were on fire. They hurt a lot, but I wasn't supposed to move. And so I had a lot of intense suffering around this. I felt self-pity. I felt fear. I felt upset. I was angry with myself. I was angry at others. I was feeling as impossible. Why me? And very impatient, frustrated. All kinds of layers of things were happening. And because I kept sitting this way, I slowly began to notice that there was a difference between experiencing the pain in and of itself and experiencing the pain with the self-pity and all the different aspects of it. And if I was able, and if I had all this extra stuff, the self-pity, the impatience, the frustration, then it was, you know, intense psychological suffering, emotional suffering. But if I dropped the self-pity, the pain remained, but it didn't become as bad. It like had space, had breathing room, it eased up. And sometimes the pain would become quite manageable until I kind of forgot about kind of putting aside the self-pity. It would come roaring back and the knee pain would get intense again. And I saw over and over again how much overlay I put on it, and slowly began to kind of simplify and not add all these layers on top. So that to me was incredibly inspiring, and it gave birth to a kind of inspiration, a faith, a trust, a confidence that this was a useful to shift how I saw the pain. And so this radical idea from this talk today is whenever you have suffering and you're going to try to take a dharmic approach to it, like in meditation, see what the shift is if you stop calling it depression, anxiety, despair, grief, sadness, without any diminishing of it, without any disrespect for it, of how what's happening for you, but simply shift the orientation to see it as just as pain. And then breathe with that and see if some of the layers that are extra, the baggage on it, begins to settle. If you get inspired, like I was, by that, or have trust or confidence in it, that gives birth, that's similar to what the Buddha said, that learning to see pain, suffering in a new way, through practice, through the eyes of vipassana, clear seeing in this way, he said that gives birth to faith, to confidence, a kind of inspiration. If then you don't just get inspired, but with that faith, that confidence, to say, okay, now I'm going to start practicing this new way of seeing. I'm going to stabilize it, and I'm going to use it more, and really kind of give myself to develop this new way of seeing. That's when the stream begins to flow. And at first, it might be just a trickling little stream up in the mountain. But if we want to get this stream to grow and develop, we have to practice it. And so then we start practicing. We have this inspiration. And if the inspiration can fuel the practice, the confidence can fuel the practice, rather than continually falling back into the old patterns, that can give rise to gladness, to a delight, that we have a practice. Wow, this is cool. I didn't know that I could live this new way. It's hard, it's challenging, I doubt it at times, but there are times when it's really great, and I think I'm on a path. So the Buddha said that once that faith is there, and we continue to practice, without the practice, probably nothing will happen, then with the practice, then there comes a delight, a gladness or a satisfaction or a feeling, this is right. As that practice continues, and you start getting more evidence that this works, as we get into the flow of the stream of practice, and it becomes, we start feeling the stream getting bigger, and the stream starts to have a little bit more momentum. And initially it seems like we're doing the work, but with time it just seems like, oh, now it's the practice is doing me. I'm kind of flowing along here, and that being involved and being really engaged, having been able to put aside a lot of the distracted mind, and the undistracted mind is really into doing this practice, seeing in a new way. There's a kind of physiological delight, joy that comes, and the Buddha said that. If we keep practicing with delight, from the delight there grows a joy. As we keep practicing and settle into this and really start feeling the beginning, the fruit of this is really works, this is good, the practice begins kind of growing. The stream gets lands into a large lake that's calm and very tranquil. And tranquility sets in. It's like there's a certain ease, a certain like, oh, I have something here that really works. I don't have to be so agitated or so anxious anymore because I have this practice. The practice really helps me to see in a new way. I can't always do it, but just knowing I have the practice can make us less agitated. As we keep practicing and that tranquility fills up, it goes over the banks and creates a different river that's smoother. Remember, that rivers get bigger and come down off the mountain into the rivers and the plains. Big rivers can be very quiet, whereas in the mountains it's quite noisy, rapids and boulders go over. So it gets quieter and becomes something called happiness and pleasure or deep sublime feeling. It feels so good to be in the flow. That, the Buddha said, gives birth to concentration, to really be present, really be really here. That the Buddha said, gives birth to seeing things as they are, which is now to get confirmation, a real kind of qualitative, different kind of affirmation, confirmation of the value of seeing in this new way. And now we see directly the evidence, oh, this really is significant. And to see things, because things are constantly flowing and changing this natural world, to really see this flow and moving along and seeing how nothing gets stuck and nothing gets frozen unless we bring the baggage and the self and the attachments to it, then things get solidified. But to see that without that baggage, without that overlays, that things just flow, natural flow, the natural inconstancy of movement. And so not only do we feel like we're in the stream of practice, but now we see the stream, we see the flow. This feels so good, so right, so much clarity, that there starts to be, what the Buddha said, gets born, is now a disinterest or a disenchantment with the old way of seeing. And the old way of seeing through the ego, egoistically or self-centeredly or with all the baggage and concerns or even some of the old cultural ways, familial ways we've learned to always see our life, are seeing, you know, maybe that's not so accurate or not so useful to that lens. And so we start becoming disinterested, disenchanted with it. And it begins to relax and fade away. And that gives birth to the further this fading away. So seeing things as they are gives birth to a disinterest, a disenchantment, which gives birth to this movement of fading away of our attachments. And when the attachments have faded away enough, and who knows when enough is enough, but when they're enough, something lets go, and we have liberation. Liberation then flows further into a deep understanding of what this liberation is all about. And one of the things it's about is now not just a confirmation of the seeing in a new way, but now inhabiting the new way of seeing in a whole different, like it becomes like who we are rather than something that we introduce into our life. So remarkably, 2,500 years ago, the Buddha and the people around him who were practicing this, you know, really looking at their minds, understanding their minds, understanding how to practice with these minds and hearts we have, discovered this amazing tools and capacities of the mind that then they described in, I think, quite inspiring ways. And the description I use today is something called liberative dependent arising. How liberation comes dependent on certain conditions being in place. And there's 12 steps, and they are born on the basis of seeing suffering in a new way. That gives birth to faith. Faith gives birth to delight. Delight gives birth to joy. Joy gives birth to tranquility. Tranquility gives birth to happiness. Happiness gives birth to concentration, samadhi. Samadhi gives birth to seeing things as they are. Seeing things as they are gives birth to disinterest in attachments. Disinterest, disenchantment gives birth to fading away of attachments. The fading away of attachments is the condition that leads to the ending of attachments, which is called liberation. And once there's liberation, that's not, the story doesn't end there, but then there's understanding what has happened, and really understanding now we're living in the world with new eyes, seeing in a new way. And all this depends on itself. The whole list depends on practicing. The practice we do is what, that's the rain. And I love the analogy of rain because it's just drops, little drops, moment by moment, that we're adding. And those drops are not inconsequential moments of mindfulness, but the continuity of it, more and more, over and over again, so that it's, you know, not just occasional drop, but it becomes a kind of a, you know, lots of rain falling on the parched ground, and then overflowing and building up the volume that allows the river to get bigger and bigger and bigger. So practice based on seeing in a new way. And so you might consider, is there a new way to see that you could try out? Is there a new way of seeing you'll do provisionally, meaning you don't have to accept that this is the absolute true way of seeing things, but maybe it's just a different orientation, a different perspective, and to see without any reference to me, myself, and I, without reference in past and future, just see pain, see suffering just as pain, it's very simply, and see if that begins to loosen up the crust, the solidification of all this extra baggage, extra layers that we add on top of the difficulties of this human life. And if we, those difficulties don't have all these extra layers, maybe it's easier and maybe we'll be inspired to practice, because it's really worthwhile once we start getting a glimpse of this new way of seeing. It's really worthwhile to do what it takes to let this glimpse become bigger and more a regular part of our life. So to see in a new way, vipassana. May you see in a new way, and may we as a community and share that with each other and see each other in this new way. And I think that we'll end up with tremendous delight, appreciation for each other. Thank you very much.